And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's July the 14th. For those with a French background, it's Bastille Day. We'll talk more about that later. It's the 195th day of the year. 170 days remain till the year's over with. And this date's most famously associated with the storming of the Bastille in Paris. That event escalated into the French Revolution, and it's a day of national celebration in France. Yes, let's go celebrate murder. In 982, King Otto II and his Frankish army were defeated by the Muslim army of Al-Qasim at Cape Colonna in southern Italy. 1223, Louis VIII becomes King of France when his father, Philip II, died. 1420, the Battle of Vitkov Hill, a decisive victory of Czech Hussite forces commanded by the Jan Žižka against the Crusade army led by Sigismund, Holy Roman Emperor. 1430, Joan of Arc, taken by the Burgundians in May, is handed over to Pierre Cachon, the Bishop of Beauvais. And of course, to the bishop, since she heard voices, she was evil. 1769, an expedition led by Caspar de Portola leaves its base in California and sets out to find the port of Monterey, now known as Monterey, California. I've been there. Nice town. 1771, foundation of the Mission San Antonio de Padua in modern California by the Franciscan friar Junipero Serra. 1789, the famous storming of the Bastille. Now, the Bastille, it happened the afternoon of July 14th in Paris. It's a medieval armory, a fortress, and a political prison, and it was known as the Bastille. It represented royal authority in central Paris. The prison contained only 7 inmates at the time of its storming, but it was seen by the revolutionaries as a symbol of the monarchy's abuse of power. And the fall of the Bastille was the flashpoint that set off the French Revolution. During the reign of Louis XVI, France faced some major economic issues. And the crisis was caused in part by the cost of intervening in the American Revolution and exacerbated by a regressive system of taxation. And, of course, the poor harvest in the late 1780s. On May 5th, 1789, the Estates General convened to deal with this issue, but were held back by archaic protocols and the conservatism of the Second Estate, which represented the nobility, which made up less than 2% of France's population. On June 17th, 1789, the Third Estate, with its representatives drawn from the commoners, decided it was going to become the National Assembly, the body whose purpose was to create a French constitution. Now, the king initially opposed this development, was forced to acknowledge the authority of the assembly, which renamed itself the National Constituent Assembly on July 9th. Now, at that point in time, Paris was close to insurrection, and in Francois Mignet's words, intoxicated with liberty and enthusiasm. And it showed wide support for the assembly. The press published the assembly's debates, and the political debate spread far beyond the assembly itself into the public squares and halls of the capital. The Palais Royal and its grounds became the site of an ongoing meeting. The crowd, on the authority of the meeting at the Palais Royal, broke open the prison of the Abbaye to release some grenadiers of the French guards, reportedly imprisoned because they refused to fire on the people. You see, the problem is, the media of the time was doing what our media does today, whipping up unrest. And whether they refused to fire on the people or not, that was the rumor. The assembly recommended the king give clemency to the imprisoned guards. So they went back to prison and got a pardon. The rank and file of the regiment, previously considered reliable, now leaned toward the popular cause. Well, On July 11, 1789, Louis XVI, acting under the influence of the conservative nobles of his Privy Council, dismissed and banished his finance minister, Jacques Necker, who had been sympathetic to the Third Estate, and reconstructed the ministry. The marshals, Victor Francois, Duc de Broglie, La Galissonnière, the Duc de la Vaughan, and the Baron Louis de Bertel, and the Intendant Foutin, took over the post. The news of Necker's dismissal reached Paris the afternoon of Sunday, July 12th. The Parisians presumed that the dismissal marked the start of a coup by conservative elements, and liberal Parisians were further enraged by the fear that a concentration of royal troops brought in from the frontier garrisons to Versailles would attempt to shut down the National Constituent Assembly. So, of course, all those who wanted revolution got their wish. And as the case quite often, the revolutionaries were eaten by their own revolution. Now, as I say, the storming of the Bastille escalated the widespread discontent, and it broke out into full-scale revolution. 1789, the inaugural Fête de la Fédération is held to celebrate the unity of the French people and national reconciliation. 1791, the beginning of the Priestley riots in Birmingham, targeting Joseph Priestley as a supporter of the French Revolution. 1798, the Sedition Act of 1798 becomes law in the U.S., making it a federal crime to write, publish, or utter false or malicious statements about the U.S. government. Now, the Alien and Sedition Acts is what it was really called. Were four acts passed by the Federalist-dominated 5th U.S. Congress. John Adams signed them into law. They made it harder for an immigrant to become a citizen, allowed the president to imprison and deport non-citizens who were deemed dangerous or who were from a hostile nation, and it criminalized making false statements critical of the federal government. That would have sent all of CNN to prison, quite frankly, if it was still in effect. 1808, the Finnish War, the Battle of Lapua was fought. 1853, opening of the first major U.S. World's Fair, the exhibition of the industry of all nations in New York City. 1865, the first ascent of the Matterhorn is completed by Edward Whymper and his party, four of whom died on the descent. 1874, the Chicago Fire of 1874 burns down 47 acres of the city, destroys 812 buildings, killed 20 folks, resulted in the fire insurance industry demanding municipal reforms from Chicago City Council. 1881, American outlaw Billy the Kid is allegedly shot and killed by Garrett in the Maxwell House in Fort Sumner, New Mexico. In actuality, there were two men that entered that darkened bedroom, Billy and a friend. Pat Garrett shot the friend, hit Billy in the head, and put him under the bed, and reported he'd killed him. When he went there, allegedly to arrest Billy, he took four deputies, none of whom knew what Billy looked like. Everybody who knew what Billy looked like was left behind. 1900, armies of the Eight Nation Alliance captured Tientsin during the Boxer Rebellion. 1902, the Campanile in St. Mark's Square in Venice collapses, almost demolishing the Lagetta. 1911, Harry Atwood, an exhibition pilot for the Wright brothers, is greeted by President Taft after he lands his airplane on the south lawn of the White House. He flew in from Boston. That would get you shot down today. 1915, beginning in the McMahon-Hussein correspondence, but between Hussein bin Ali, chief of Mecca, and the British official Harry McMahon concerning the Arab revolt against the Ottoman Empire. 1916, Battle of Delville Wood begins as an action within the Battle of the Somme. It lasted until September 3rd, 1916. 1933, in a decree called the Gleichstellung. Adolf Hitler abolishes all German political parties except the Nazi Party. 1933, Nazi eugenics program begins with the proclamation of the law of the prevention of hereditary disease offspring, requiring the compulsory sterilization of any citizen who suffers from so-called genetic disorders. 1943, in Diamond, Missouri, the George Washington Carver National Monument becomes the first United States National Monument in honor of an African American. 1948, Palmiro Togliatti, leader of the Italian Communist Party, is shot and wounded near the Italian Parliament. 1950, Korean War. Beginning of the Battle of Tejon. 1951, Ferrari takes her first Formula One Grand Prix victory at the British Grand Prix in Silverstone. 1957, Rawa Atayeb takes her seat in the National Assembly of Egypt, becomes the first female parliamentarian in the Arab world. 1958, in the 14 July Revolution in Iraq, the monarchy is overthrown by popular forces led by Abd al-Karim Qasim, who becomes the nation's new leader. 1960, Jane Goodall arrives at the Gombe Stream Reserve in present-day Tanzania to begin her study of chimpanzees in the wild. 1965, Mariner 4, flyby of Mars, takes the first close-up photos of another planet. Photographs take approximately 6 hours to be transmitted back to Earth. 1983, Mario Brothers is released in Japan, beginning the popular Super Mario Brothers franchise. 2002, French President Jacques Chirac escapes an assassination attempt from Maximilien Brunieri during a Bastille Day parade at Champs-Élysées. 2013, dedication of the statue of Rachel Carson, a sculpture named for the environmentalist in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. 2015, NASA's New Horizons probe performs the first flyby of Pluto, completes the initial survey of the solar system. And finally, in 2016, a man plows a truck into a Bastille Day celebration in Nice, France. Kills 86, injures 434 before he was gunned down by police. Let's see what else we got. Christian feast holidays, Boniface of Savoy, Gaspar de Bono, St. Camillus of Lais in the Roman Catholic Church, except in the U.S. Dies Irae of Canterbury, John Keble in the Church of England, Samson O'Connor in the Episcopal Church in the U.S. In France and its dependencies, it is Bastille Day, which is a national holiday. International Non-Binary Peoples Day, whatever that might be. Republic Day in Iraq and Victoria Day in Sweden. It's the birthday of Crown Princess Victoria. It's an official flag-flying day in Sweden. Let's see what else we might have. The storming of the Bastille was actually the first major event of the French Revolution. In 1535, Emperor Charles V, Holy Roman Emperor, conquers Tunis. 1581, English Jesuit priest Edmund Campion is arrested for sedition in Anglican England. He was later hung, drawn, and quartered. 1682, composer Henry Purcell is appointed organist of Chapel Royal in London. 1698, the Darien scheme begins with five ships and about 1,200 people departing Leith for the Isthmus of Panama. If you've never been to the Darien in Panama, you don't know the meaning of the word jungle. 1714, the Battle of Älven. Russian fleet overpowers the largest Swedish naval force. 1790, the The Fête de la Fédération, attended by Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, is held across France on the first anniversary of the French Revolution. In 1795, the French National Convention decrees L'Armistice by Claude-Joseph Roger de Lille, France's national anthem. 1798, the first direct U.S. federal tax on states, which included dwellings, land, and slaves. 1822, the date was planned for a slave revolt in Charleston, South Carolina by Denmark Vesey and Peter Poyas. The plot had been discovered in June, so authorities were ready. 1823, Switzerland signs boundaries for fugitives. 1845, the first postmaster's provisional stamps are issued in New York City. 1850, the first public demonstration of ice made by refrigeration by Florida physician George Gorey is shown. 1853, Commodore Perry requests trade relations with Japan. 1853, New Zealand holds its first general election. 1861, General McDowell advances toward Fairfax Courthouse in Virginia with 40,000 Union troops. 1861, a naval engagement at Wilmington, North Carolina. The USS Daylight establishes a blockade. 1863, the Battle of Falling Waters in Maryland. 1864, gold is discovered in Helena, Montana. 1865, the Chickasaw Nation is the last of the five tribes to surrender to the Union after the Confederate defeat. 1868, Alvin J. Fellows of New Haven, Connecticut, patents the tape measure. 1870, Congress grants Mary Todd Lincoln a life pension in the amount of $3,000 a year. She was Abraham Lincoln's wife. And by all accounts, crazy as a road lizard. 1877, General Strike brings U.S. Railroad to a standstill. 1891, John T. Smith, an American inventor, patents the cork board. 1914, engineer Robert Goddard is granted the first patent for a liquid-fueled rocket design. 1921, Nicola Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti, convicted of killing their shoe company's paymaster, and sentenced to death in Dedham, Massachusetts. 1927, the first commercial airplane flight to Hawaii. 1932, the Belgian Chamber rules the Dutch language will be used for education of Flanders. 1933, Germany begins mandatory sterilization of people with hereditary illnesses. All it took was accusation. That would equal guilt. Same as today. 1934, and another example of brilliant reporting, the New York Times declares Babe Ruth's 700 home run record will stand for all time. Wrong. 1936, 1 million demonstrates to support French People's Front government. 1938, Benito Mussolini publishes an anti-Jewish African manifesto. 1940, due to beanball wars where pitchers try to hit batters in the head, Spalding advertised a batting helmet that had ear flaps. 1940, Lithuania becomes a Lithuanian Soviet Socialist Republic. 1941, 6,000 Lithuanian Jews are exterminated at Vysotsian camp. 1941, the ceasefire of Joan of Arc. That ends combat in Lebanon and Syria. 1941, jam is rationed in Holland. 1944, there's an attempt to liberate prisoners in Amsterdam, and it failed. John Post was arrested. 1946, Dr. Benjamin Spock, not the one in space, published a book called Common Sense Book of Baby and Child Care, which apparently went on to ruin quite a few generations of babies. 1950, R.E. Wayne awarded the first Distinguished Flying Cross in Korea. 1951, in his last race, 1948 Triple Crown Champion Citation wins the Hollywood Gold Cup by four lengths. That made him American Racing's first millionaire horse. And in 1952, the SS United States crossed the Atlantic in 84 hours and 12 minutes. That was a record heading west. All right. We have been talking about military encounters with extraterrestrials. We actually have had, for a good number of years, a real War of the Worlds going on. Now, according to Burke Jocelyn, Korea Herald staff reporter, during the Korean War, both American and Korean pilots encountered flying saucers. Now, according to what Francis Wall told John Timmerman, an associate of the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies, Chicago, following their January 1987 interview, noted UFO researcher Richard Haynes checked Army records that listed Wall as a private first class Korean War veteran assigned to the unit he described he belonged to. What he was doing was telling a story about an encounter with a UFO. He belonged to the 25th Infantry Division, 27th Regiment, 2nd Battalion, Easy Company, which was stationed in North Korea's Chorwon County, Kangwon Province, known as the Iron Triangle for the heavy artillery barrages it suffered. During the night of April 18, 1951, Wall and his comrades were in position on the slopes of a mountain overlooking a small village that had recently been abandoned prior to being bombarded by American guns. As the shelling started, he said, "We certainly noticed on our right-hand side what appeared to be a jack-o'-lantern come wafting down across the mountain." Now, at first, nobody thought anything about it. So we noticed this thing continued on down to the village where the artillery airbursts were exploding. It had an orange glow in the beginning. And we further noticed this object was so quick it could get into the center of an airburst of artillery and remain unharmed. Well, the infantrymen observed this strange phenomenon for almost an hour. Wall said, "When this object approached us, it turned a blue-green brilliant light. Hard to distinguish the size of it. There's no way to compare it. And the light was pulsating." But as he said, the object approached him. He said he asked for and got permission from Lieutenant Evans, our company commander at the time, to fire on this object, which I did with an M1 rifle. And I had armor-piercing bullets. And I hit it. It must have been metallic because you could hear the projectile slamming into it. Now, why would that bullet damage this craft if the artillery rounds didn't? And Wall wasn't sure unless the occupants of the jack-o'-lantern had dropped their protective field or whatever it was. But the object went wild when he hit it. The light was going on and off, and it went off completely once, and it was moving erratically from side to side as though it might crash to the ground. Then they heard a sound. There had not been any sound previously, but the sound they heard sounded like a diesel locomotive starting up. And then we were attacked. We were swept by some form of a ray that emitted impulses and waves you could visually see, only it was aimed directly at you. Just like a searchlight sweeping around, and you could see it coming at you. And you'd feel a burning, tingling sensation all over your body as though something was penetrating you. So the company commander ordered them into their bunkers. We didn't know what was going on, but we were scared, though. And these are underground dugouts. We had peepholes to look out and fire at the enemy, so I'm in my bunker with another man, Wall said. We're peeping out at this thing, and it hovered over us for quite some time. Lit up the whole area with its light, and then he saw it shoot off at a 45-degree angle. 1 minute it was there, next minute it was gone. They thought that was the end of it, but 3 days later, the entire company had to be evacuated by ambulance. They had to cut roads in there and haul them out. They were too weak to walk. They had dysentery, and subsequently, when the doctors did see them, they had an extremely high white blood count, which the doctors could not understand. Now, Wall and his comrades decided not to report the incident to their superior officers because they'd lock us up. Think we were crazy? But as Wall's experience shows, UFO experiences during the Korean War differed from World War II encounters in that the enigmatic objects interacted with military personnel on the ground, as well as in the air over Asia and America. Late one afternoon, September 19, 1950, not 3 months after President Truman ordered the U.S. Air and Sea Forces to defend the South Korean regime against communist invasion from the North, police stations and newspaper offices across five counties in southeast Missouri were deluged with telephone calls and telegrams reporting a translucent silver sphere, an object having a bright gold center with lavender edges, hovering over Poplar Bluff, a small city of 15,000 residents. The nearest Air Force base, located outside of Memphis, Tennessee, about 140 miles due south, was notified and immediately sent a P-51 fighter down. It was flown by Lieutenant Claude Haverty, and he was told to investigate the sighting. Well, when he arrived, he made a visual contact of his own. The object, he reported, is like a big silver marble that moved off at his approach to the town of Malden, 30 miles to the southeast. And then it proceeded at an altitude of about 60 to 80,000 feet over the New Madrid area at the Illinois border. He said its behavior was reported as hovering stationary to moving at a terrific rate of speed after it turned its lights on. That's according to reporter Bryce Baker. He also said the object made no sound and left no exhaust trail. Well, running low on fuel, Haverty broke off pursuit, but only after confirming that the metallic contact moving under its own power was not a weather balloon, as his superior officers initially suspected and afterward announced. They ordered his replacement, flying another F-51 into the air at once. But by the time Lieutenant Donald Sufker arrived over New Madrid, the object had actually descended to 40,000 feet. He got a good long look at the spherical and elliptical shape before it took off vertically at an astounding velocity, vanished almost instantaneously into the bright, clear afternoon sky. Looking up after it disappeared, he said he saw a small but indefinite number of white-green lights above him. It appeared to move in bursts of extremely high speed northward. That was reported in the southeast Missourian. Less than 24 hours later, a passenger plane flying over Poplar Bluff toward Memphis narrowly missed hitting the speeding object in the same airspace where Lieutenants Haverty and Sofker had encountered the silvery spear the previous afternoon. According to American Airlines Captain Garman, I was flying at 18,000 feet, and it looked as though it just came right across our nose. Said, I never saw such a brilliant flashing light before. And it wasn't a clear light. It seemed to be burning with a orange, yellow, and blue flame. It lit up the whole sky. At that same moment, which is 1:35 a.m., a terrific explosion in that sky was heard by many thousands of people on the ground across southeastern Missouri and southwestern Illinois. They even heard it in Kentucky and parts of Tennessee. Later that same morning, about 10:19, a specimen of the latest Air Force jet fighter slammed into a hillside near Piedmont, Missouri, 40 miles northwest of Poplar Bluff. And although the F-89 was totally destroyed, the pilot, Lieutenant Logan McMillan, ejected in time, was able to walk to the nearest post office where he telephoned his superiors. Now, they restricted all public information about the crash to a terse public release explaining nobody was injured and no property was damaged. Northrop Scorpion was an all-weather interceptor, the first jet fighter designed in that fashion. Well, interesting to alien intelligence, perhaps, is also the first combat aircraft armed with air-to-air nuclear weapons, the unguided Genie rocket. And while Air Force spokesman dismissed Poplar Bluff's Big Silver Marble as a wayward weather balloon and determined Lieutenant Suffer's sighting of white and green lights at high altitude didn't merit comment, astronomers told how Captain Garman and tens of thousands of people over a four-state area experienced a falling meteor. And the crash of the F-89, of course, was delegated to a short shrift in the local press. But no officials were able to explain how all these events could have been centered in southeastern Missouri within the same 18-hour period. The Northrop Scorpion appears to have been downed by either the Big Silver Marble or its escorting blue and green lights. But as many previous accounts indicate, through disabling the jet fighter's avionics. Now, this supposition is underscored by the craft's nuclear weapons capability, which is an apparent sore point with the extraterrestrial sensitivities. And if this is the case, it was the first such attack of the Korean conflict era. Now, the Korean War in the air with off-world vehicles is mostly characterized by near misses aggressively initiated by UFOs, seemingly bent on collision courses. First confrontation of that sort took place during the evening of September 7, 1950. A little more than 4 months after hostilities began. It didn't happen over Korea, though. It happened over Lakehurst, New Jersey. U.S. Navy Lieutenant Junior Grade Robert Haven was piloting a Douglas AD-4Q Sky Raider ground attack bomber at 3,500 feet when at 7:15 p.m. he noticed a steady white light to his right. He said that light was about 500 feet higher and about 5 miles away, headed toward the southeast. As it made a slight climbing turn and a 180-degree sweep, diving directly at him from 4,000 feet. He had tried to get on the tail of the object, but it turned and attacked, too fast for him to execute an evasive maneuver. He braced for impact and watched helplessly as that luminous spheroid flashed over its cockpit canopy at 200 feet. Uniquely for so close a pass at such high velocity, neither wash nor slipstream trailed the object, which traveled at almost 900 miles per hour. And then it slowed to less than half that speed. Well, undaunted, he pulled the Sky Raider over into the tightest right turn he could make in order to pursue this craft. As he did, it suddenly climbed to 2,000 feet per minute, looped back, and came back at him again, which nearly... The lieutenant narrowly maneuvered out of harm's way. Three more times, Lieutenant Haven and his orderly opponent banked and charged, though his target assiduously avoided drifting within firing range of the Sky Raider's four 20mm AN-M3 autocannons. Well, during their wild skirmish, it was clear to him the spheroid's pilot was determined to collide, and only disengaged at around 11,500 feet with the approach of U.S. Air Force interceptors. In a matter of seconds, the object shot vertically to 25,000 feet and vanished. Similar fireball dove on and nearly struck a North American F-86D Sabre jet over Hungnam in the Hamyang Namdo province during the first tangle over North Korea. Happened on the afternoon of October 12, 1952. Shots had been fired the previous summer after radar on a secret Air Force installation detected an unidentified aircraft approaching from the northwest at Mach 1, which is about 70 miles per hour faster than the world's fastest fighter at the time. But unlike that episode this time, the UFO instantaneously dropped its speed from 770 miles per hour to a mere 100 miles per hour as it came close to the airfield. And of course, we scrambled a couple of Sabre jets. As the jets climbed to 40,000 feet, the intruder slipped from radar screens in an evasive descent. Tower operators ordered one of the pilots to maintain altitude at 20,000 feet, and the other dove to 5,000 feet. They were hoping to get the craft between them so they might make visual contact. And sure enough, the F-86 assigned to the low altitude began converging on a silver metallic object that looked like a donut with no hole in the middle. Well, that silver metallic object gradually picked up speed, but as the Saberjet continued to gain on it, the pilot's effort to alert first his higher-flying wingman and then the base failed when his radio inexplicably died. Pushing his aircraft to its performance limits, he was only 1,500 feet behind the speeding Donut, just within firing range of his six machine guns. Realizing he couldn't hold that distance much longer, he loosed a stream of 50-caliber rounds at the intruder, which escaped vertically into the sky at an incalculably high rate of speed. Back in the U.S., following December 4th, a glowing object rapidly ascended toward Air Force Lieutenant Robert Arnold's North American T-28 Trojan. They were 6,000 feet over Laredo, Texas at the time. He caught sight of the bright bluish-white light at 8:46 p.m. and put the Trojan trainer in a tight left turn to get a better look at it. As he did, the object leapt in seconds to 3,000 feet above him, then dropped back down to his altitude, flying eastward to a point in the evening sky where it paused as though it had been nailed among the stars. 2 seconds later, it suddenly flew at him head-on at high speed, wavering slightly at about 300 feet as if determining which side to pass the aircraft. The mysterious light missed Arnold's left wing by no more than 150 feet in a blurred, reddish-bluish haze somewhat shorter than the 33-foot length of his T-28. Fearing renewed attack, he turned off the Trojan's running lights while spiraling down to 1,500 feet. The object came about and dove only once more, but after a few seconds, broke off pursuit, pulled up, and climbed out of sight at 9:53. Arnold had been in danger for a full 7 minutes. Hanford, Washington's much-reconnoitered nuclear power plant was again the focus of alien scrutiny on December 10th. Over the facility at about 7:15 p.m., between 26,000 and 27,000 feet, hovered a large white sphere with reddish light behind two apparent portholes. The airborne ARC-33 radar of a dispatched Lockheed F-94 Starfire, which was our first day-or-night all-weather jet fighter, had locked on the contact, which was visually confirmed by both crew members multiple times. Apparently annoyed by such persistent scanning, the object abruptly rushed at the Starspire and banked at the last minute to avoid collision. The off-world craft proceeded on its way, disappeared about 7:30 p.m. Also on December 10th, yet another near collision occurred over Hungnam, North Korea, when a U.S. Navy pilot's Grumman F-9F Panther jet was almost grazed by an orange football. Previous May 31st, before sunrise, another Starfire pilot had himself initiated two separate head-on attacks against a round, brilliant, bluish-white light. Sighted earlier by ground observers. In his own words, he descended in a port turned to intercept an unidentified object 6,000 feet below his position on a 90-degree turn course at an altitude of 8,000 feet. As he made his turn, the light began to port climb to intercept his descending F-94, thereby silhouetting the Lockheed jet against the dawn light. Would extricate himself from this vulnerable position, Starfire pilot hit its afterburner. During the ensuing dogfight, neither opponent was able to get astern of the other. After several more inconclusive passes, the strange craft disengaged by increasing its speed and departing on a 45-degree heading. Clearly, these craft far surpass anything our technology was able to do at that time. And apparently, they are able to surpass what we can do now. Well, I'm still in the recuperation period of my medical endeavors, so I'm going to call it quits for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow when we'll talk more about military encounters with extraterrestrials. Till then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.